Okay, good morning, Chem 38 students. So this video is going to be for, let's see, for October 6th. That is Tuesday, October 6th. And this is going to be for the nomenclature worksheet. Now, hopefully I was going to be doing a live lecture for this worksheet, but as it turns out, I'm going to be traveling on that day. So I managed on last Thursday to get my trailer repaired. And so the leaf springs on my trailer are good to go. And we're ready to start our journey back down into California. However, we got delayed again for a little bit over this weekend. And there's weather coming in next weekend, weather coming in around Thursday of next week, all along the West Coast. We're expecting some storms. And so we're going to try and book it down tomorrow afternoon. Tomorrow, I'm actually recording this on Sunday. And we're going to leave Monday afternoon and be traveling Monday and Tuesday. And so there'll be no office hours on Tuesday. And we're going to do this as a recorded lecture, unfortunately. But we're going to do the best we can here. And then all the rest of them should be live and we should be good to go from there. And we'll see how I can make it up to you guys. All right. So nomenclature worksheet. We did a huge nomenclature lecture the last lab. The first half of that last lab that we did was all on nomenclature. And I'm not going to redo all of that, but I'm going to fill in some holes. And what we'll do is we'll repost that video or refer back to it. And then I'll fill in some of the nomenclature holes. So I'm going to start a screen share, take it to the iPad, and we'll talk about nomenclature some more. Okay. All right, looks like I've got that up and working. So as I said, we're gonna fill in some holes from the nomenclature worksheet. So let's do a little bit of review and then we'll start filling in those holes, okay? So the first thing that we know within the nomenclature that the that there are three different types for the Ionic nomenclature. Those three types were the main group metals, main group nonmetals. We had the transition metals. With nonmetals. And then we had main group. And transition metals. With polyatomics. So those are the three types that we basically went over. And just really quickly, the rules sort of were that we had always the cation first, followed by the anion, and that cations are positively charged and anions are negatively charged. So within nomenclature, we always note the name of the cation first and then the name of the anion second. A formula, for instance, if we had magnesium chloride and we write its formula MgCl2, and we're going to name this, we would look at naming the cation first. So magnesium, and that magnesium represents an Mg2+, and chloride, which represents a Cl-. And we said that for the cations, we don't change the name. The name is unmodified from the elemental name. So the cation name, unmodified. The anion name, we modify and we change the ending of the anion name to IDE. So chlorine with the INE ending becomes chloride IDE ending, where the IDE denotes that it is an anion. Doesn't tell you what the charge is, but it tells you that it is an anion. Okay. So that's a quick little overview. And we had talked about the transition metals, and we had talked a lot about polyatomics in the last video that we did. So I'm not going to redo all of those, but I am going to go back and look at a couple of things that I had mentioned but didn't give a whole lot of detail into. So let's do that, looking at the transition metals. So within the transition metals, there were different charge states. And we said that these transition metals, that when we looked at them, they came in three different types that were the three main types of transition metals. One of them were the plus one and plus two category. The other was the plus two and plus three category. And the last one was plus two and plus four category. There were only two elements that we really looked at that were in the plus one and plus two. They were copper, which was in a plus one state, and copper, which is in a two plus state. And the other one was mercury, Hg2+ and Hg2+. So this one here being the mercury, which is considered to be the plus one mercury, but because there's two of them grouped together, it has a two plus charge on it. For the plus two and plus four, we said there was two elements that fit into that category. It was lead, Pb2+, and Pb4+, and tin, Sn2+, and Sn4+. And then the bigger category, plus two and plus three, had a lot of them that fit into it. There was iron, Fe2+, and Fe3+. There was cobalt 2+, and cobalt 3+. There is chromium 2+, and chromium 3+. And I think that there's some others that are in there with that 2+ and 3+ group as well. And manganese, Mn2+, and Mn3+. Okay, so we get the idea. And these names, we had named these copper, Roman numeral one, so that the one indicated the one charge state. Copper Roman numeral two, likewise indicated the two plus charge state. And we can go down the line and we could show that this one was iron Roman numeral two and iron Roman numeral three. And we have lead Roman numeral two and lead Roman numeral four. Okay, so we have the fact that these metals are named using Roman numerals that help us remember what the charge state is. Okay, that is the newer naming system. Within this worksheet that you're going to do, and I'll show you the worksheet in a few minutes, within the worksheet, there are several places where they want you to know both the old name and the new name for these metals. And so there's an older naming system for these transition metals that we need to talk about that we haven't talked about yet. So here we go, the new naming system. For transition metal ions. In this system, what we do is we do the name of the metal, followed by Roman numeral. that tells the charge state. And so as an example, we could have tin Roman numeral 4, and this would equal the tin ion that has a 4 plus charge state. Okay, but in the older naming system used a series of suffixes. And again, this is really only for the transition metals. We don't do this for the main group metals. So this is for transition metals only, not main group metals. The older naming system for the transition metals this was a root, uses a root followed by a suffix. That indicates high or low charge state. And the roots are frequently taken from Latin. So the roots are a little bit harder to remember for many of these. The suffixes are IC and OUS. IC is used for the high charge state, OUS, the low charge state. The root, often taken from Latin. Okay, so let's show how that works. Let's take a couple of metal ions and look at their old and new names. Let's look at Fe3+, and let's look at Fe2+. So the root for this is ferr, F-E-R-R. And the name then, the old name, would be F-E-R-R-I-C, ferric. So the Fe3+ is the ferric ion. The old name for the Fe2+ is F-E-R-R-O-U-S, ferrous. So the old name for the Fe2+ is ferrous. The new name? This would be iron, Roman numeral 3, or iron for the 2+, Roman numeral 2. The Roman numeral names are much easier to use. They're intuitive. The Roman numeral just tells you exactly what the charge state is. The IC and the OUS do not tell you the charge state. They don't differentiate between 3 and 2 or 4 and 1. What they do is they tell you the charge state, high or low, and it is upon the student using the metal to know what are the possible charge states for any given metal. Knowing that iron can only be 3+ or 2+, then if you see IC, you know it's the 3+, and if you see OUS, you know it's the low charge state. So that's how we go about and do these. So we have the root, fair, and we have the IC, which is the high charge state, that's going with the 3+, and we have the OUS, let's do that in blue, which is for the lower charge state. And that's how we correspond them. So how do we use them in terms of a compound? Well, we had looked at these before in terms of their oxides. Let's look at them again in terms of their oxides, and we can give the old name and the new name with the oxide. So here we've got Fe2O3. This is a compound which is comprised of two irons and three oxides. Oxygen in group 6A is always a 2-. Remember that the anions are always fixed. So we add up all those negatives. That takes us to 6 negative charges. Those 6 negative in charges imply that there must be 6 positives. And if I take 6 and divide it by 2, divide it between the irons, then each iron must be 3+. So now I know the charge state of the iron in terms of what's in that compound. Now I can give it its new name and its old name. So this is the name, the previous name that we used, the new name. The new name for this is iron, Roman numeral 3, oxide. The old name is going to be fer, followed by one of the two suffixes. So we go back and we look. The suffixes are IC and OUS, IC being the higher charge state, OUS being the lower. Iron comes in 3 and 2. This is the 3, this is the higher, so this is going to get the IC ending. So this becomes the ferric oxide. So we have the high charge state, 3+ charge state, 3 Roman numeral, IC ending, ferric oxide. If we wanted to compare that to the low charge state of iron, the iron 2 oxide, let's do that one real quick too. So iron FeO, in this combination, we have one iron, one oxide. Oxide is 2-. That means that I have 2 negative charges. There must be 2 positive. And because there is only one iron, this must be the 2+ iron. The new name for this compound, the name that we used previously, is iron, Roman numeral 2, oxide. The new or old name for this, the old style name is the root fer, followed by the OUS ending, ferrous oxide. So this one, we have the 2+ charge state, the 2 Roman numeral, and the OUS ending. Okay, so you have your two new best friends. You have ferric and ferrous. And that's how we go about naming these. So the roots for many of the compounds, what we need to do is we need to go through and we look at the different compounds and give you some of the roots. So let's go and we'll copy. That's the way that we can do this. We can go back to our list of metals. We can copy this list of metals. And we'll take and we'll put the roots on here. Transition metal roots. For older naming system. All right, so why do we have this older naming system? Why don't we just move on and move to the new naming system? Well, the fact is that if you go and you look in chemical stockrooms, you will find these compounds listed under both their old name and their new names. Some of the bottles will have older names. Some of the bottles will have newer names. In the medical field, which is where many of you are headed, many of these compounds are listed in the medical field by their old names only and almost never by their new names. Even though these changes in this new naming system is not that new, the new naming system has been around for probably 30, 40 years. And yet we still find these compounds listed under their older names. And they were so heavily used and so prevalent that we just find that a lot of compounds, depending upon the compound and depending on the manufacturer, will use the older style naming. And like I said, in the medical profession, almost exclusively the older style naming. So you need to operate in both. You need to be able to understand the new names and the old names. It's critically important to be able to function within a lab. All right, so let's look at some of these roots that we have here. And I'm gonna get rid of some of my coloring that I've got. And all right, so for copper, it's C-U-P-R for copper. So for instance, the copper, which is plus one, is cuprous, O-U-S. And the copper, which is plus two, is cupric. The mercury is the root is M-U-R-C-U-R. Actually, am I doing that right? Now I gotta ask. M-E-R-C-U-R. Mercure, and it is then Mercurus, O-U-S, and mercuric. So let's do it this way. Here's my root and my endings. For iron, it was fer, F-E-R-R. So we have ferrous and ferric. For copper, it's a little bit easier, not copper, cobalt. It's cobalt, and we use cobaltus. Keep losing the L in there, cobaltus, O-U-S, and cobaltic. For chromium, it's chrome. So we have chromis and chromic. And for manganese, it's mangan. So it's manganous and manganic. And for lead, it's plum. P-L-U-M-B. So it becomes plumbus and plumbic. And the only other Latin one is the tin. The tin is stan, S-T-A-N-N. So it becomes stannous and stannic. So we have to remember not only the charge states, but we have to also remember, and I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to hit these that have the Latin terms. So you can see the Latin terms that are in there. The other ones that don't have Latin terms, I'm not going to highlight. And that means that I can get rid of the mercury highlighting too. But you can see the Latin terms and how they come about and are used in that. Okay, so there's our older style naming system. And then everything else of the nomenclature is pretty straightforward. So let's go take a look at that nomenclature worksheet. Let's bring it into this. And I had it sitting here waiting to drop in. So this time I made sure that it was published on Canvas. So it is definitely published on Canvas. And you guys are good to download it directly from Canvas. Here's what that nomenclature worksheet looks like. So it's in module 5. So you're going to look in module 5. Is it? Oh, no, it's not module 5, is it? It's module 4. I'm checking now. It's in module 4, covalent bonding, activity 9. So module 4, activity 9. And it is published and set to go. Okay, so in looking at that, where did my screen go here? My screen share is not coming up. I'm going to assume that my screen share is still working. Looks like it is. Okay. So here's activity 9. Activity 9 goes through a fairly good review of how to do all the nomenclature. So it's meant to be an activity that is a tutorial all on its own, a standalone tutorial of all of the nomenclature. And they talk about the three different types. They talk about representative metals and nonmetals, and they give a couple of examples. The metal cation is always first, the name of the element unchanged. The nonmetal anion is second. The element name is given with an IDE ending. The compound is electrically neutral without any charges in the formula. They go into part 2, transition metal and nonmetal, and they give examples of those. And they show how to use the examples like I just did, FeO, made of Fe2 plus and O2 minus, ferrous oxide, old system, and iron 2 oxide, new system. So they're going through and they're showing you exactly how to do it. And they do the same with the ferric oxide and iron 3 oxide. And then they give you some others. They give you the lead and the tin. And they show you how to use those. And then they go through polyatomic ions and give examples of the polyatomic ions and tell you how to use parentheses when there's two or more. They go through all of those examples, including combining them with transition metals that have multiple charge states. And then they go into molecular compounds. All right, bypass molecular compounds for the moment. I'm going to come back and address those at the end of this lecture, not right this second. Let's suffice it to say that there is another type of nomenclature for what are called binary covalent. This is a completely different type of nomenclature. And I don't like to teach that until I am entirely done with the ionic, because once you learn molecular binary covalent nomenclature, you want to use it for everything. It's so simple, it thinks, I should just apply that to everything. It doesn't work. It only works for certain types of compounds. We'll come back and address that at the end. Don't let that confuse you. Acids. I introduced this in the last video. I talked about acids a little bit. We'll cover it a little bit more at the end again, not right this second. Okay, so here is the sheet that I attached to the last video that had all of the polyatomics on it and also all of the metals. And notice that this has both the new name and old name for the metals. So all of those names are there that you can then include on flashcards. But remember how I grouped them. The grouping on the flashcards was critically important. Okay, we get through all of these. Now, here is the activity that you're going to do. In this activity, they are grouped exercise by exercise. So in the first, you have representative metals and nonmetals. These here, you're doing exactly what you're supposed to. This is a sodium cation and a fluoride anion. So we're going to name the cation first, sodium, and the anion, fluoride. And I have named the cation first and the anion second, exactly in the same way in which they're listed in the table there. And there are no indications of the charges in the name, and there are no indications of the number of the ions in the name. For instance, look at the second one. I'm going to do the second one too, and then I'm going to turn you loose. The second one has strontium, and I think I need to do the darker blue. Strontium and, no, it's not the lighter blue. Strontium and iodide. So these two metals, or excuse me, this metal and nonmetal, strontium and iodide, I'm naming them without indicating how many of each thing are present. Because when I rebuild the formula, I rebuild it based on the charges in balancing the charges. For instance, in that strontium iodide, it is a strontium, which is a 2 plus based on its place in the periodic table, which is in group 2A. a 2 plus cation. And iodide, which is in group 7A, and is a 1 minus anion. So as they go together in a 2-to-1 ratio in order to get two negatives and two positives. So the name doesn't tell me how to put it back together directly. There's no indication of two iodides. I just have to know from the charges in the way in which I rebuild the formula. Now notice what they're doing here is they're having you go one direction, taking and going from the formula to the name, and then from the name to the formula. I suggest working on a separate piece of paper when doing this so that you can balance these appropriately. For instance, cesium and phosphide, having a periodic table handy might be a really good thing. And I don't have a periodic table handy. I need to go get one. And let's see if I've got one handy where I can open it from recent chem lab manual. No, I don't. That bites. I know what we can do. Let's go to the last activity and let's look at the periodic table there, because it should have been down at the bottom of that activity someplace. Oh, it was in the first set of notes for that activity. There we go. All right, now we need to find cesium. Having a periodic table handy and just always on your table when you're doing chemistry is a good skill to have. There's one inside, well, you're using a digital textbook, I think. No, you have a physical textbook. Within the cover of the textbook, there's a periodic table. That's a good place to go. Or get one on your computer, or print one out and have it on your desk. Let's find cesium. Cesium's here, CS. It's a group 1A, so it's a plus one cation. Let's go back now to our note that we're creating. Now that we know that it's a plus one, we can do cesium plus one, and phosphide, that comes from phosphorus. Let's switch back and look at where phosphorus is. Phosphorus is here. It's in 5A, which is a 3 minus anion. So a 3 minus anion. So phosphide, P, 3 minus. In order to balance these, it's going to require three of my cesiums in order to balance the 3 minus to get 3 positive. So my formula is going to be CS subscript 3 P, and that's going to be my formula. So this is why I recommend working on a separate sheet of paper in order to go through and do all of the balancing work that you need to do, because there's simply not enough room within this worksheet to be able to do all of that, okay? In step two, exercise B, transition metal and non-metal compounds. Name the following using both systems. This is lead, Roman numeral 2. Or this is plumb, P-L-U-M-B, and it's the low charge state of lead. So this is the O-U-S ending. That's what they want for each one of these, is they want the new name and the old name for each one of these ions here. And then name the following. Now, when you name the following, you have a choice of how you want to name it. You can name it using the older naming system or the newer naming system. It's up to you how you want to name them, unless they specify. Other than that, I would say go ahead and name it the way you want. And the Roman numerals are the easier way to name it. That's what I would recommend. Now, be careful though, because some of these, like silver, silver was one that we said in the first video that yes, it's a transition metal, but silver only comes in a plus one. And because of that, it doesn't require a Roman numeral. So this one, this is just silver chloride. And that is true because silver here, this is like a main group metal. With only one charge state. It's always AG plus, never anything else. But the other ones, This one, the iron, you'll have to figure out what charge the iron is to be able to name it appropriately. And you could use the older or the newer naming system. Similarly, the copper, you'll have to figure out what charge state it is working from the anion and then name it appropriately using the older or newer naming system. Referring to questions two above, what is the charge on the silver? Well, we just said that. Plus one. What is the charge on the iron and the copper? You'll have to figure that out. Give formulas for the following. Now here, chromium 3 oxide, that's with the newer naming system. So that's chromium 3 plus. Here's stannous, OUS, that's the low charge state for tin. And you'll have to figure out what that low charge state for tin is. Similarly, you go through and you do each one of these. All right, moving on. Ionic compounds with polyatomics. This is going to be a combination of all of the nomenclature. It is going to be main group metals and transition metals, all with polyatomics. The first one is actually a polyatomic cation. So that one, that is the NH4 plus cation and the O, which is a 2 minus oxide. And in order to balance it, it requires two of the ammoniums to get two positives and two negatives. And this is called ammonium oxide. I find that by going back up to the table and looking here, ammonium NH4 plus at its charge state and knowing what its charge state is for that polyatomic. That is the only one polyatomic cation that you really need to know. Hydronium is another important one, but it doesn't form ionic compounds. So hydronium becomes important later when we do acid base, not critical now. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to highlight this guy as being really important, as this is the only one cationic polyatomic. Polyatomic cation. And the only one that we really need to keep track on and be careful with. All of the other polyatomics are anions and they're all listed on the right-hand side of that sheet. Okay, let's go back down and look at those. There's more here. And there are some that you were not asked to memorize, which means you'll have to go to the table and look in the table to try to find them. Thiocyanate, for instance, was one that you weren't asked to put a lot of attention into and may have to look up. Some of these others, you should be working on memorizing their names. So I'm going to let you look those up. And then they give it to you by name and ask you to write the formula. Now be careful when you look at these names: nitrate, nitride, chromate, chlorate, phosphate, cyanide, cyanate. There is one in here that is not a polyatomic. This one, nitride, IDE ending. The IDE ending is for the main group nonmetal, not a polyatomic. So the IDE ending. And phosphide, I said there was one, there's actually two. Phosphide, the IDE ending, be careful of those that have the IDE ending. The only one that has an IDE ending that is different is this guy here, cyanide. Cyanide is listed in our table up here under the minus one charge, cyanide ion. There it is, CN minus. So it's an older name that has, unfortunately, an IDE ending and can throw you if you're not paying attention. All right, now molecular compounds. This is where it gets a little bit different and we need to go and we need to look at molecular compound nomenclature, okay? So I'm gonna scroll down and create a new page. I'm gonna add a page. And at the same time, I'm gonna put a note here. This is going to say see page following worksheet. In the notes. All right, now, what I want you to do is take a deep breath for a second. Just close your eyes, relax, take a deep breath, we're going to separate from the type of nomenclature that we've been doing into what is called binary covalent nomenclature. All right, so this is completely new and completely different. Binary covalent nomenclature. It's what we call molecular nomenclature. But it's specific to the binary, meaning two. So what does this name mean? It means two elements covalently bound in a molecule. That's what we're looking at in terms of this type of nomenclature. And these are denoted as X, N, Y, M, where X and Y are both nonmetals. When X and Y are both nonmetals, that means that there are no charges. There are no cations or anions. There are no charges of any kind. So no charges, no ions, which means that we can't use charges to reassemble these compounds. And because there are no charges, the name must reflect how many of each species are in the formula. So the name must reflect the number of each atom because there are no charges to rebuild the formulas. I hope that's clear enough. Let's look at some of these combinations and how we actually go through and name these compounds. So some of these compounds are things like SO3. These are two nonmetals. That means that this compound is molecular. As I name this molecular compound, the name must reflect how many of each thing are present. So the first element, if there's only one, I just list the name of the element, sulfur. So rules here. First element listed by name. If more than one, a prefix is used to tell how many. Prefixes are di, tri, tetra, penta. We'll keep going. Hexa, hepta, octa, nona, and deca. So it's 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10. There are other prefixes. We never really go above 10, so we don't need to worry about that as much. I am going to move this down because there's one more prefix in here, mon, for one. But if there's only one, we don't need to use a prefix. And then the second element, what we do in the second element always preceded by a prefix. Even if there's only one. It's always preceded by a prefix, followed by name of element, with IDE ending. So this compound here, this compound looking at SO3, this would be sulfur, trioxide. So we hit the sulfur component. And then the 3 is telling me the tri. And then I've got oxygen in here, which is my oxide. Always ending in that IDE ending. So the second one always ends in IDE, sulfur trioxide. If there is more of the first one, then I have to use a prefix. So let's see, let's do Cl2O. This one would be dichlorine. Always listed as the element, INE ending, or whatever the element ending is on the periodic table, followed by always a prefix for the second one, monoxide. So we're getting here that we've got the first element. We've got a prefix that is telling me di. We've got then the CHL, I'm missing an L in there. There we go, chlorine. And then there is only one thus the mon, and then the oxide following the IDE ending. And that one, we'll do it in as a dotted little one, that is the dichlorine monoxide. Okay, so we've done a couple of these names. These names are not hard at all. These names are very easy. The problem is that people want to take and apply this to the ionic compounds. If you apply this to the ionic compounds, you get the wrong answer. We do not name the ionic compounds in this way. So this naming style is only for the binary covalent naming style. So they both have to be non-metals to use this naming style. And the worksheet goes through a series of these, and it gives them both here by formula, where you name them, and then by name, where you turn them into a formula. And going the opposite direction is much easier. So we just did this one. This is sulfur trioxide. And down here where I've got bromine trichloride, this would be bromine, BR. Chloride is Cl, tri, 3. So that's how I would interpret that. There's no charges. There's no way to put this together by charges. So that's how we do the name. I think Krista has taken this piece out in the worksheet that you guys have. I'm checking to see. She has indeed. So on the worksheet that you have online, this piece right here, where they're asking you to memorize some of these names, that piece doesn't exist. But she does have the acids here. And so maybe we should spend a moment, and she has put the acids there with, as a multiple choice, where she's giving you the names of the acids below for you to be able to fill in. But Those acids, we could do that acid nomenclature really quick because we already talked about it in the last video. So I might as well just hit it right here real quick too. Acid nomenclature. The acid nomenclature, remember, stemmed from what we called the proton families. And so I'm going to take two proton families and show you the proton family names and then get down to the acid and how the acid works. So I'm going to do that with SO42 minus sulfate, which ends in ATE, and SO32 minus, which is sulfite. Okay, if I take and I add acid protons to this, so we're going to add a hydrogen ion. Remember that we increment the charge down by one, so it becomes HSO4 minus one. And if I do that again and I add in another proton, it becomes H2SO4, and that, when it becomes neutral, is what we call the acid. Similarly, I can get HSO3 minus and then H2SO3. So I've taken and I've added one hydrogen ion and then a second. All right, the names on these. This one was hydrogen sulfate, and the acid is sulfuric acid. Okay, so follow this here, the ATE ending. When an ion ends in ATE, we then, when it becomes an acid, use the IC acid nomenclature. And so anything that ends in an ATE for its polyatomic anion, when it becomes an acid, will get an IC acid ending. And so that's where the sulfuric acid comes from. When it is an ITE, then the way that I name this one is with the same root, sulfur, but I use the OUS acid. So it becomes sulfurous acid, OUS acid ending. And this one was hydrogen sulfite. Oh, there was a secondary name for these. Or bisulfite, sulfate first. And an or bisulfite. There we go. Okay, so we have the acid endings. ATE endings go to ICOUS, and I think I just said that wrong. I'm going to back up and slow down. ATE endings go to IC acid, and ITE endings go to OUS acid. Okay, so those are the acid nomenclatures. There's one more acid nomenclature that I should hit here, though. S2 minus. This is sulfide, the ITE and IDE ending. This one, if we add enough hydrogens to it, this is hydrogen sulfide. And then if I add two, H2S, this gets the acid type of nomenclature, but it started with an IDE ending. And so what ending do we use when it is IDE? We use here hydrosulfic acid. So the IDE ending goes to hydro IC acid, and then the root sits in the middle, hydrosulfic acid. So that's how we handle the IDE ending. What else do I need to show you? Maybe I'll show you one more thing here real quick. This is bringing up an issue for me where we just did this guy, SO3, sulfur trioxide. Let me highlight something for you really quick to be careful of. Okay, careful. SO3 versus SO3 2 minus. This one is binary covalent. This one, polyatomic anion. This one is named sulfur trioxide. And this one, sulfite. And the difference really is that 2 minus charge. And that makes all the difference in the world. Without that 2 minus charge, it becomes molecular, or we would say that it's molecular, and it gets the binary covalent nomenclature. So you need to be careful in looking at those charges when you see charges. Gosh, I think that gives you just about everything. If I do too many more examples, I'll just start filling in this worksheet more and more, and that won't give you guys a whole lot of practice, and you need the practice. And so that's what this worksheet is about the practice. Okay, I'm going to cut it here. And I think I've given you quite a bit to work with. Let me stop the screen share. I think I stopped that over here. There we go. We're back to the video. We're back to me. So I'm going to post this tonight. This is Sunday night, but I'm going to send out an email tomorrow to let you guys know that this is up already and that you can view it. And hopefully when I see you again on Thursday. On Thursday, I'll be back in California and everything should be great. And hopefully California will be getting some rain on Thursday. So I'm going to knock on wood, that hope that's the way that things go. And yeah, and we'll see you soon. Okay. Take care, you guys. Bye-bye.